Welcome to Divorce Talk, a podcast for people who are contemplating divorce, going through one, or would like to know everything about the divorce process. Each episode, you'll hear from Chicago divorce lawyers from Bierman LLP, one of the largest divorce and family law firms in the state of Illinois, speak on all things divorce, from child custody, divorce litigation, mediation, the collaborative process, and everything in between. Now, here are your hosts, the Bierman Divorce Lawyers.
Hello, my name is Deanna Napoli-Diarco. I'm here today with Aubrey Parker and Howard Emmerman. And today we're going to speak about how business law and family law overlap in divorce cases. And before we get started into our content, I'm going to ask Howard and Aubrey to share a little bit about themselves. Howard?
I've been practicing law since 1970. That's a long time. During that time, I've practically been involved in every kind of civil dispute you can think of. Litigation. About 20 years ago, I started doing family law, and I have been doing it together with my litigation practice ever since.
And I'm Aubrey Parker, and I've been practicing law for not quite as long as Howard, but I have been practicing for the better part of 10 years, and I practice exclusively in the field of family law, which encompasses mainly divorces, prenuptial agreements, postnuptial agreements, and occasionally an adoption case. And it is with pleasure that I've worked with Howard on a few cases because there is overlap between business law and family law.
All right. Well, without further ado, Howard, can you just get us started and perhaps provide an example? I'm sure you have many of them, but perhaps an example that could talk about the overlap of family law and business law and, you know, how it has really benefited your clients.
I can. Here's a simple example. We represented the husband in a divorce case. The parties were already divorced, and the wife was seeking additional support as a post-decree matter, a post-judgment matter, to repair the pipes in her condominium unit, which was a very expensive high-rise condo above Lakeshore Drive. The wife presented a bill. The bill was extremely high and sought payment from the husband. Here's where the business law aspect comes in. We know from our real estate practice that in condominiums, anything that's behind the interior walls is part of the common elements. And therefore, the repair responsibility lies with the association and not with the individual unit owner. We raised that as a defense and we defeated the motion easily. Our opponent was not aware of those facts and probably would not have sought relief had he known about it. So there's an example, Sandra, where you'll find business law knowledge and experience, and this is a very basic piece of knowledge, will interplay in family law cases.
Okay. Aubrey, do you have an example that you'd like to share?
Sure. Howard and I had a case together a while ago where husband and wife were both partners in a business with other business partners as well. I think there were actually four of them. Do you recall that case,
yes,
Howard? And it was extremely helpful for me to have Howard's expertise because as a family law practitioner, we don't always come across business law issues, but we do frequently. And having someone that's able to help us navigate not only what is best for the two parties involved, but what is best for all four partners in a partnership, that was really helpful. And Howard, would you like to speak more to that?
Sure. Here was the issue. The husband and the wife wanted to split their ownership in the company. However, the organizational document, in this case, the operating agreement for the limited liability company, provided that if either of them sold their units or their ownership percentages, that there would be preemptive rights that would lie in the other shareholders, and they would have the right to preempt any sale from one spouse to the other and to buy out the interests at a lower price. So that hampered our ability to transfer ownership. But the wife wanted to have all of the incidents of ownership so that she'd know what was happening with the business, she'd know how the business was run. And the way we solved the problem was we provided in the marital settlement agreement between the parties that while the husband did not transfer his interest to the wife, he would hold 50% of that interest as a trustee for the benefit of the wife, and as between them, had duties to report to her on a periodic basis as to the status of the business, share all financial statements with her that he received, and whenever he received a distribution, no matter what type of distribution it was from the business, she was entitled to 50%. So we gave as much protection as we could to the wife, who was our client in that situation, while not triggering any preemptive rights of third parties, which would have frustrated the deal.
Sure, it's very difficult, right, in divorce cases where it's a partnership, much like a business, right? And people may be business partners, they are marital partners. So making a divorce even more difficult if they're in business together. Has there been a situation where partners, husband and wife, are married, they're getting divorced, and they are in a business together, and one would like to sell and the other would not? Have you ever come across that? And how, I mean, I know you can't get into complete detail, but how do you handle those type of situations?
Well, first of all, the spouse who's not active in the business, it's not always the wife, it could be the husband, usually wants to monetize his or her interest in the business because this is the party who's going to need assets, having no other source of income. The spouse that's in control of the business, who runs the business, doesn't want to monetize the business because usually there's still unrealized gains in income and benefits that could be derived. So when you have a situation like that, what you have to do is evaluate what's better for the marital estate as a whole. What will maximize the assets of the marital estate? And you can actually compromise that, if a compromise is possible, by providing in a marital settlement agreement that after a period of time, the business will be put up for sale. It will be appraised. And if it appraises for a certain amount of money, then it will be sold. And if it does not, then it may be continued to be run, assuming, again, that the party who's operating the business does so honestly and doesn't try to waste assets of the business in order to minimize the other side's realization.
Mm-hmm. So when a potential new client comes to see you, Aubrey, and they have a business, right, can you walk us through the process of what that first meeting is like and how a person should really go about hiring a family law lawyer, especially if they do have a business together or there are complicated business assets involved?
Sure. So during an initial client consultation like that, if you have a client who owns a business, either in whole or in part, it's important to do some fact gathering at that initial consultation and learn as much as you can about the business. Try to determine, are they a majority shareholder? Are they a minority shareholder? Who else is involved in the business? And then explain to the client that their business, whether they're a minority or a majority shareholder, is going to need to be valued. And that gets us into kind of a whole nother topic of business valuation, but you talk to the client about what that will entail, the management interviews that are going to need to take place among anybody who is a member in that business, how it could ultimately impact their divorce. If it's a business that was started during the marriage, it's considered a marital asset, a marital business. If it's a business that they had prior to the marriage, it's considered a non-marital business. Regardless, they still need to have it valued. And in the process of having it valued, if there are documents that need to be reviewed, gathered, et cetera, it's incredibly helpful to us to have at our firm as kind of a one-stop shopping type option. We have people like Howard who are very well-versed in these types of different types of organizations and different types of businesses and who can really help us along the way and help make sure that we're getting things on the right track.
And Howard, I know you've sat in countless meetings. What are some things that lay people coming in to speak with you should ask you when considering hiring?
Well, the first thing they should ask any lawyer is, do you have the capability to handle an estate of this size and of this complexity? And it's not so much the question that they have to ask, with listening to the answer. If in the answer you don't see a demonstration that a lawyer or a firm of lawyers that you're consulting are able to grasp these things and have experience in these areas, then either you have to hire or they have to hire somebody else to consult with them, or you can come here and then it is one-stop shopping, because I'm not the only lawyer here with business experience. There are plenty of lawyers at our firm that hasn't, that had that experience. And where somebody like me needs to step in, we can.
Are there any other things that you would like to add regarding, you know, examples that you think would be valuable for people listening or hearing, you know, need to know when really determining or deciding on a firm that has family law and business law?
Aubrey, why don't you talk about that case you had with mortgage, where the mortgage was an issue, mortgage foreclosure?
Sure. So another issue that sometimes comes up is what's going to happen with the house and who's going to keep it? Is one spouse going to keep it? Is the other spouse going to keep it? And if so, if one spouse is going to keep the house, it's very common that both parties are on the mortgage together and that it is jointly held by both of them. So you have to figure out what to do in that scenario. One thing that you can do is pay off the mortgage. You can also transfer the residence into one party's name, but you have to be careful because in transferring it into one party's name, you may trigger various clauses in the underlying mortgage document that make the entire amount due or that have severe penalties if the mortgage rates have changed and are lower since the time that you enter into the mortgage. So there's a lot of creative solutions that we can craft in order to work around that, such as maybe you have one party's only live in the residence and the other party moves out. So they're still accomplishing their goal of separating and having separate residences, but you have both parties stay on the same mortgage for a period of time. Maybe it's a year, maybe it's slightly longer than a year. And during that time, you work on refinancing the mortgage or otherwise convincing the mortgage company to release one spouse from liability. That way you're not triggering some of these more technical clauses in there that could get people into real financial trouble. And by not triggering those clauses, you actually end up saving the entire marital estate money, which is beneficial to both parties.
There's another corollary I'd like to add. Over the last 20 years or so, Illinois in particular has entertained a form of ownership known as tenancy by the entirety. That's an old form of ownership that was revived by statute. And what it basically says is that as long as a married couple lives in the marital residence and holds property as tenancy by the entirety, that no creditor can ever attach the interest of either side. Now, that's other than a mortgage where obviously both sides have now signed the mortgage and they're both liable. As soon as there's a divorce, the tenancy by the entirety is broken automatically and creditors have a free rein. So if some third party tried to put a lien on a husband's assets, for example, and did so in a way that that the law permits, as soon as there's a divorce, that tenancy by the entirety is gone and the lien will attach to the husband's interest. So again, lawyers who handle divorces have to be conversant with the way you hold title and with the way you administer the divorce and the way you structure it in a settlement.
You say that most divorce lawyers are armed with that knowledge. Is that just a typical thing that divorce lawyers know, or would you say it's unique, you know, to firms that have both business law and family law?
Look, I don't know what lawyers know and what they don't know. I've encountered divorce lawyers who have that experience over years. I've encountered many who don't. What you get here is a guarantee. Who have the experience because we have business practice within the firm. I still have an active business practice. So we're available and others like me are available to consult. Whereas in another firm, you as a potential client, you're going to have to decide for yourself whether these issues will be correctly construed, understood, analyzed, and covered by your lawyer.
Any other takeaways before we finish up?
Yeah, I just have one takeaway. And this is directed to the spouses who are not in control of a business or in control of an investment portfolio You are not powerless. Just because you don't know stuff doesn't mean you can't find it out, and we know how to find it out. And if your spouse doesn't cooperate, we know how to take discovery and get it from third-party sources. So do not feel helpless just because you're not aware. And do not feel guilty because you don't know. It's not your job to know. That's what we're here for. That's why we like to say that business law has a real important role in maximizing a settlement, in getting a fair settlement, and getting your goals satisfied.
Great. I would echo everything Howard has said.
Great.
She never does that.
Thanks, Howard. Thanks, Aubrey. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to find out more or get in touch with Howard or with Aubrey, please visit our website at www.biermanlaw.com. And this isn't the last that you've heard of them. They'll be back speaking about another family law and business law topic. If you like what you've heard and what you've seen, please subscribe to the podcast. Please also follow us and like us on Facebook and LinkedIn.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Divorce Talk. Visit our website at www.biermanlaw.com, where you can subscribe to the show so you'll never have to miss a single one. Please also follow us on Facebook and LinkedIn and subscribe to our YouTube channel. If you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating. Be sure to tune in next time for another enlightening episode.